Hey guys, I'm working on a new country song inspired by my wife.
Oh yeah? What's that?
Is she in jail?
No.
She leave you?
No, but it's called Put That Thing Away.
Are you that thing?
You know, that's the wonderful thing about songs. You don't have to explain them.
Right? It could be anything.
In a Garden of Eden, baby.
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it?
It's supposed to be in the Garden of Eden.
Oh, really?
And they misunderstood, the band misunderstood the words, so... And I got a DeVita.
That's awesome.
Hey guys, slow week in security hacking, wasn't it?
Yeah, not.
That means they're getting better.
Yeah, or we're getting worse.
Yeah, and right, I know. And we've been heads down this week creating hacks of our own. So,
Oh, anything you can share?
No.
No.
Not even like the nature of it or
no
malicious. How about that? The nature is malicious.
Acme Anvil Company.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to tell you about it, there are probably about 2,000 sites that you get access to that
we're working.
Yeah,
we're working
with vendors.
We're trying to work with vendors. It's a slow process.
It is a slow process.
Well, good luck. Yeah, and good luck keeping that a secret, too.
That being said, if you need to run Bitcoin somewhere.
What?
I said that being said, if you need to run a Bitcoin miner somewhere, I got 2,000 sites.
Oh, my God. All right. That was a joke, kids. Although
not technically.
Bitcoin's, not technically. Bitcoin's in the can anyway.
That's true.
All right. I brought this first story to the table. The Week in Ransomware from Bleeping Computer. We hacked the hackers.
Oh, yes.
I love this. Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, this week has been relatively quiet regarding ransomware attacks and researcher, that is, until the FBI announced the disruption of the Hive ransomware operation. Hive launched in June 2021 and quickly became one of the most active and prominent ransomware operations, launched as ransomware as a service. I remember you guys talking about this.
Yeah.
Right.
The Hive operators were responsible for developing the ransom and maintaining data leak negotiation sites. At the same time, affiliates were recruited to conduct attacks and deploy the encryptors. This is fascinating. This reads like a crime novel.
Mm-hmm.
As part of this arrangement, the operators kept 20% of all ransom payments and the affiliates earned the rest.
So,
yeah, it's kind of like a used car salesman.
Yeah, so it's pretty much like I would put together a website and a support staff, and you would go encrypt a customer site, whether you do it with phishing or show up on site and plug something into a drive, whatever, who cares,
yeah.
And you're an affiliate. And when that company then went to go pay, they'd pay through my sites. And I would guarantee that the site's up and running, and I'd guarantee that you have the best malware. But I'm not doing anything technically wrong, because I didn't encrypt the customer. I'm just taking payments for services.
Yeah, you did.
And you know what I mean? So it's an interesting business model.
Kind of like organized crime.
Yeah, it's like growing
drugs. Organized crime.
Yes.
It's like growing what?
Growing drugs. You didn't sell them, but you just grew them.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Right.
But we're seeing the government, I'm sure Cyber Command was involved, hacking back. And so that's, imagine, I mean, we have this image of the British police where they don't have guns, but some of them have guns. I've seen the machine guns.
Yeah.
When the bad guys have guns, you have to use guns. When the bad guys hack, eventually you have to hack back. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this in the open. And the West is finally getting the clue that we can't just all get together and sing kumbaya. We have to sometimes hack them back.
What?
Do we have enough hackers in the U.S., good guy hackers, to help with these efforts?
We do if you pay them.
Yeah.
We have a lot of really good... If you look at like the Hack the Box top ratings, there's a lot of Americans who are really good at this stuff because we have a high education level. We have a lot of interest. We have a large population. We're the third largest population in the world.
And you too, specifically, were in the top charts on Hack the Box, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we did a foray where we got to our team got to the top seventh. I think in order to go higher than seventh, we would have had to like spend our weekends exclusively doing that. Right. And we have lives technically.
Yeah.
But But a lot of those people are, I mean, there's Canadians, there's certainly Russians and Chinese and everything else in there. But I was shocked to see how many Americans are out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
No, and now I think with the laws changing a little bit, I think, you know, it's not too far ago, 5 years, 4 years ago, where, you know, hackers were still, even good faith hackers, were still worried about, hey, I'm going to be probing on this website where I don't have a contract. And if I find an issue, I'll let the company know. Right. And 9 times out of 10, that company would try and prosecute you. Right. Even though you didn't cause any damages, you were letting them know of a security vulnerability. That was the mentality was, you know what? I don't want to, you know, I want to sue all the hackers who are trying to help me, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No.
So I think now that the laws are starting to change where, you know, if a hacker is to, you know, notify an organization under good faith, like didn't, you know, we didn't have a contract prior, but I didn't break in and steal any sensitive information or credit right. card data, et cetera. I saw that there was the exploit and then I turned it over to the organization.
Yeah.
They're supposedly, you're supposed to be at this point kind of safe from the law, right, Patrick?
Yeah.
Patrick's my legal counsel.
Is it like a good Samaritan kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
Well, remember we had that state that started to get the governor who started to get really upset that somebody pointed out that they had no clothes.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so I don't know the nature. I don't know the exact nature of the law, but there's certainly if you stand in the window of your home naked and someone looks, that's not peeping Tomming.
Right.
That's
right.
You looked at
but,
the house.
But on the the other side, if your house is on fire and I break in to the front door to see if I can save somebody.
Good Samaritan laws will typically protect you.
Yeah. You shouldn't sue me for breaking and entering. Right.
But I could.
You could.
It's just that probably right. get thrown out.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what organizations were getting away with, right? They'd see, hey, this company's website is so bad. It's on fire. Let me see if I can find a couple of these vulnerabilities and let the company know. And they'd be like, hey, you broke into our house that was on fire. That's not cool. Yeah, so we're going to arrest you. And that doesn't make any sense.
And no. And things are quite behind in that regard. We're still catching up. The average person in Congress has no cyber or even technical competence. Most of them are lawyers and most of them are 80 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
80-year-old lawyers, not our target demographic for cyber insight.
Bernie Sanders getting all angry and stuff.
Right.
Bernie might be one of the most technical ones there, but I'm just saying.
Right, actually. All right.
So I think it's good. You know, and so what's interesting about this article is there were no arrests. So even disrupting the Hive ransomware group, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's not like, hey, we were able to pin down, you know, a bunch of the contributors and trying to arrest them and that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's always interesting to see where they'll pop back up because
whack-a-mole.
It's almost like stamping on an anthill. Yeah. Like they'll show up again somewhere and start another, you know, ransomware affiliate program. Just
there he goes under
quiet
the desk
for a while.
Well, you know, it's good to see that, that the bad guys get prosecuted once in a while. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of bad guys, who wants this next one?
So I can take this one. I think this was added by our team. So our team is we're always kind of on the cusp of, you know, what is kind of the scariest threat out there that we can use to demonstrate to customers about different security principles and practices.
Right.
We come across some interesting things. And in this particular article, this is hackers use the new Swift Slicer Wiper. Wow. That is a tough one to say. To destroy Windows domains. So we find a lot of targeted malware. Either it's ransomware, so it's encrypting. But there's a point to that, right? They're looking to encrypt file data so that they can impact the most sensitive data in your organization, but they're not looking at targeting the infrastructure, right? Yeah. They're not looking at, oh, I'm going to drop every computer. I'm going to brick all the servers and that sort of stuff. Right,
well,
exactly.
And a Windows domain is a single point of failure for a whole bunch of computers. So that's a natural, easy target if you want impact, right?
Right. Absolutely. Now, this particular version of malware, if you will, was discovered in recent cyber attacks against Ukraine.
By Russia.
So, by Russia? What? Mm-hmm.
This is warfare. This is cyber warfare.
Right.
This is not ransomware. It's not you know, I'm going to extort some money. This is literally warfare. They're trying to destroy assets. And that's why there's no key. There's no, they're trying to brick the systems. It's different. Yeah, it's not what we're used to.
Yeah. But I wonder, like, okay, if you're standing in, I don't know, like downtown Kyiv, and, you know, you might expect to get hit with shrapnel, maybe. Right. If let's say Russia's attacking,
yeah,
they're in the area,
yeah,
you get hit with shrapnel. In the cyber landscape, when Russia puts out this cyber nuke and points it at Ukraine, technically it could go anywhere, right? We're all standing in the center of Kyiv. It could route out this way. They could be using servers out in, right?
Because the internet is so interconnected.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I always wonder, as, you know, military units get more and more brazen with cyber attacks, you know, how much the John Q user, you know, sitting at home needs to worry about these things. Mm-hmm. Like, could a company in the United States who happens to be doing work with, you know, companies in Ukraine, could they get this? Yeah, absolutely. We've seen that happen.
Depending on how it's delivered, yeah. If they deliver it in a watering hole attack, and yep, somebody, you know, forwards the wrong thing before they get infected, there's definitely a chance of contagion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you Active Directory administrators out there, this actually targets the NTDS folder, which is for you hackers out there, is a great place for you to locate all of the usernames and password hashes for users on a domain. But for you domain administrators out there, it's kind of the keys to the kingdom, if you will. It's where most of the secret sauce is kept on a domain controller.
Before ransomware, this was kind of normal. You got a malware and it destroyed your data. There wasn't a ransom involved. Mm. It was just malicious.
Yep.
And, yep. Yeah. And we're kind of back to those bad old days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember a movie from 1980 called The Nude Bomb?
No.
I've heard of it, but I didn't see it.
So you remember Get Smart, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is a Get Smart movie. And Max is recalled to duty to help fight a villain who threatens to detonate a weapon that destroys clothing. It's called The Nude Bomb.
I mean, that'd kill a lot of people in the Northeast right now, because it's cold outside.
There's so many great gags in that movie. This is where the phrase, missed it by that much, came from. He like goes to put his pistol in his pants and it goes off. And
I thought that was something that was on the show, on the Get Smart TV show.
Maybe it was, but I never heard it until I saw that movie.
I think it was on the original, but I don't think it had that double entendre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Meaning.
So in the other one, he has this spy desk that turns into a car. So he's driving down the road in a desk and he gets pulled over, and the cop, is this your desk? Yes. 60 miles an hour is a little fast for a desk, don't you think? It's funny, wacky.
Was that the original Get Smart guy, or that's not a Steve Carell version?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don Adams, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is, I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
This is 1980 is when that came out.
So that, you know, just speaking of indiscriminate, you know, weapons, that came to mind.
so it bears mentioning that this is the GRU. The GRU is the basically the military version of the KGB. Russia's General Staff Military Intelligence Directorate, or the GRU.
Okay.
And them and the SVK, which is kind of the secret police, and the FSB, which is the other secret police. And there's a lot of these interlocking agencies. Mm. And, at this point, they may just be trying to garner reputation with Putin to show that they're more anti-Ukrainian than the others.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the contagion. It really depends on how they're delivering this. If they're delivering it by, you know, hacking into the network or spear phishing individuals in the Ukrainian directorates. But there's a lot of risk, because remember how big of a hubbub we had when a missile from Ukraine ended up in Poland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in Belarus. Yeah. Well, those were like explained away as, well, that was anti-aircraft missiles and they were fired in a different direction, or they were deflected. If Russia ends up targeting a NATO country with a cyber attack, whether it's intentional or not, it could be interpreted the way the recipient wants.
Yeah.
Because basically, if they hit a Polish military unit with this, or government, or the shutdown of power plants in Poland, that's an attack on NATO.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. And as much as the saber rattling's going on in Russia, they don't want a war with NATO because just our weapons are doing them in.
Right.
If our troops came in, it would be over. It would be nuclear as well.
Yeah, but let's say Russia were to try and attack Ukrainian servers with a devastating attack, and it somehow gets redirected to UN servers and destroys a bunch of UN servers. Is that an act of aggression?
It is, but it just it's a.
Is that it's like a bomb landing in Poland? They go, oops.
It's in the eye of the beholder. It would depend on how much hay the receiver wants to make of it. They could say they could never publicize it at all and just say, oh yeah, we got hit by ransomware. We don't know who did it. Or they could make a big deal out of it. Depends on how much they want to escalate, whether they want to try to further isolate Russia and things of that nature.
Hmm.
Everything's geopolitical at that point. It's not just when it's a business going after a business, it's economic. And when it's a government going after a government, then it's political, and that's what this is.
Right. Well, guys, hold that thought while we take a moment for this very important message. And we're back. This is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Security This Week. That's Patrick Hines and Dwayne LaFlotte.
Hello, hello.
The brains of the operations. And I guess we can't talk about cyber war warfare without talking about real warfare. And the two are just kind of getting intermingled, you know, these days.
What I've been saying is there's no one capable of hacking and willing to hack that hasn't been hacking. It's just not,
right.
It's not like there's 50,000 hackers waiting for the war to start. The war's been going on. Russia has been hitting everyone they can, every way they can. And up till now, it's been harrying exercises. It's been profit centers. It's been discrediting exercises, election meddling, things like that. Now they're caught up in a full on war. And so all those resources are going after Ukraine. But you'll notice that Ukraine isn't like back in the Stone Age. They're still operating. In fact, they're hacking back. And they're holding their own. Now, you could write that off as we overestimated the Russian advantage, which we did in a lot of regards.
Right.
But you could also write it off to the fact that about 1 million Russian men, young men, are no longer available to hack because they've either been impressed into service or they've fled the country.
Right. Yeah.
700,000 Russians, most of them educated, have fled the country, and another 300,000 have been impressed into service. Many of them not well educated, but I'm sure some of them are. And I wonder how many of them are ransomware guys or hackers or, you know, ones who couldn't avoid the draft or for whatever reason. And that's going to continue. They're talking about another 500,000 call up in Russia. And so that their cyber abilities aren't going to get better as their demographics turn badly. But the rest of the world is getting better. The thing about cyber attacks is once you use them, they're perishable.
Yeah.
So Russia's been building up these capabilities and building up these systems that they're building. This wiper, maybe they built it in the last 3 months, but probably they had it before.
Now, do you think they built it or just to hit Ukraine, or is it going everywhere?
Honestly, I haven't looked at the code, but if I had to guess, it's written in Go.
Right.
Wasn't the Conti ransomware written in Go, Dwayne?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Go is a language, by the way.
So it's probably just a repurposed version of Conti that instead of ransomwaring, it destroys. It probably just modifies the files so that they're you know, gibberish.
Yeah.
I don't know if it goes through a full, you know, encryption or just mangles them in some way.
Hmm.
But or literally just deletes them. But the thing is, once you do that, the rest of the world starts to adjust and it doesn't work the next time.
Yeah. It's kind of like viral evolution.
Yeah, Russia's ability to like throw haymakers is getting diminished. If they were to use this same attack against the United States or Israel, well, we've seen it now. We kind of, the signature's out there. We kind of know what it looks like.
Right.
And so you'd have to reinvent it. Like Dwayne, when we go after somebody, you have to basically reinvent the attack vector almost every time to make sure it doesn't get picked up.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time we create a piece of malware, like a backdoor.
This is advice.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's criminal career advice. Sorry, I was off my game there.
I know, right? It's okay. No, we'll talk about this in the next two stories as well. So a lot of times I know, right? So then a lot of times when you're creating a virus or a malicious ransomware or something along those lines, obviously your enemy is antivirus companies. So one of the easy ways to bypass all the antivirus companies out there is just change the signature of the file that you're running. And sometimes that involves adding more data than you need, which we'll talk about in this next story. Sometimes that involves literally just going in and changing some of the code, then recompiling and just making sure that the version of the ransomware you have right now isn't detected by any antivirus out there. Now, what I will tell you for all of you aspiring remote access Trojan or virus writers, do not take your brand new shiny virus and upload it to VirusTotal to see if it gets detected. Because the problem is, once you upload it, now every antivirus has it.
Yeah.
And then they start using it for detecting.
It's like asking a cop where to hide your weed.
Actually, the cop will probably sell you weed now. It's legal everywhere.
Yeah,
it's more like where to hide the murder weapon, I think, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I get this body in the trunk. Where do I put it?
Yeah, where do I put it?
And that's one of the hubbubs about chat. The AI stuff, ChatGPT and stuff like that, is you can take a malware that's written in one language and have it rewritten in another language for better delivery, but also for evasion.
Yeah, because nobody would have seen that code.
You know what ChatGPT does, though? It does validate you against your email address. So you have to be – it knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't use it anonymously.
Sure you can.
You can?
Isn't that precious? He thinks email is not anonymous.
It's adorable. It's adorable. Isn't that cute? Carl thinks that everybody follows the rules.
So, first step, hack a Russian server. Then, no, okay. There's something called a sock puppet. Have you ever heard of a sock puppet?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it before.
Yeah. So in OSINT, open source intelligence, you never use your own identity. Mm-hmm. You create identities, and those identities start having lives. They have Facebook, they have Instagram, they go on vacations.
They have friends, they have chats.
They have interests, they post, and you build up these personas over months or years, depending on how sophisticated an organization you are.
So are you saying that if say ChatGPT or any of these servers do two-factor authentication and that's required, and they do email and then they send you a text, all of that stuff can be faked?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's more work.
It's more work. It's not easy.
It raises the bar. You're not going to have some, 12-year-old doing it.
You know, this is a depressing effing show, man. I think you guys are great. We have good laughs. We go out to dinner, we drink, and then we talk. And I am horrified at the realities of the situation here. Like I have a great password manager now. Oh, apparently that doesn't matter.
It's an arm. You're in the arms race. That's
the
thing. So imagine living in a really nice neighborhood and it just slowly starts to degrade.
Oh, kind of like Altamont Springs, Florida.
Lock your doors more, and eventually you're carrying a broadsword and a knife, and you learn taking jujitsu for the wrong reasons.
You start seeing ads for weapons on Facebook, right? It's like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Attack dogs. Yeah. If you're on the internet, you're in a rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
Internet's a rough neighborhood. If you completely disconnect and you don't have any electronic footprint, you're probably doing better. It's you can skip that.
I suppose you can be like me and just be a public persona who everything that I say and do is on the internet. So who cares, right? I mean, I have nothing to hide.
Yeah. Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Yeah.
I still would. Still, if I was a bad guy, I still want your bank codes and things like that. So.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Wait, did you just give our listeners career advice?
No,
do I need to push
Dwayne's
the button
thing.
Again?
That's Dwayne's gig.
I'll do it. I'll push the button.
All right.
So
hack Carl's bank account.
Yeah.
it's gonna keep getting different.
Yeah.
And I don't. It's not harder per se.
It's gonna keep evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which what's hard is when we talk to people who are trying to join this enterprise that we call cyber, right? Dwayne and I were on a TV show, a public cable access show that was pretty fun.
Yeah, Wayne's World. I saw you guys.
Yeah.
And so we were on, and one of the things that we talked about is a lot of people say, oh, I want to get into cyber. And it's like saying, well, I want to get into medicine.
Yeah.
Okay, what's that mean? Does that mean you want to Lance Boyles? Do you want to do, you know, orthopedics?
I know Lance Boyle. He's a great guy. We have pints every Friday at Hannafin's.
But he's disgusting on the inside. So, you know, do you want to be a PA? Do you want to be a nurse? Do you want to be a PA? You know, what do you want to do? Because medicine is a big field.
Right.
And if someone says, I just want to get into medicine, there'd be more of a conversation about what that means.
Right.
And cyber is the same way. You can work on a security operations center or a SOC. You can be the desktop security person. You can be an architect in security. You can be a hacker. You can be a checklist auditor. Yep. Yeah. All that stuff. So when we talk about this security stuff, getting someone on board, one of the advices I give them is you have to be at first an inch deep and a mile wide. Like you as a programmer need to know what's Kubernetes because you might have to interface with it, but you don't have to know how it works. You don't have to know all of its its component pieces. A hacker who's doing what we're doing has to know enough that if they see it, they know where the vulnerabilities are, what the configurations might be, what the misconfigurations might be. Mm-hmm. And so we have to know a lot about a lot. Mm. And not just in our field of expertise, because our field of expertise is almost everything.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing is happening now to the user. The user starts to have to understand things like, you know, 10 years ago, users didn't have to know anything about passwords except they needed one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then we gave them advice about it. Now they have to have a password manager. The password manager has to not be one that gets hacked every 3 months.
Right.
And, you know, we're getting to the point where I'm going to a conference and delivering a session on automation.
Yeah.
And so I've had to think a lot about the future. And the future is probably no passwords. It's things like pass keys and
authenticators, and again, man. Those are so easy.
But what about the over 70 crowd? What about Congress? How are they going to adapt?
I think that's even easier. I mean, you know, Mama Franklin would rather push a button on her phone, if she had a phone, than remember passwords. She forgets them all the time. And then she writes it down on a piece of paper, and that piece of paper goes away. And she has no idea what her passwords are.
My mother's 90. She has plenty of friends that don't have smartphones.
Yeah.
And they do have banks that want to do online banking.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so it's always going to be a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
It's never going to be easy.
All right. So here's some advice, old people. If your password ends in 123, change it.
321. Go 321.
Password 123 is not a password.
No.
All right. Let's move on. Dwayne, you got this one?
Yeah, I got it. So this is Icebreaker. Hackers use new Icebreaker malware to breach gaming companies. And gaming companies in this sense, involves gambling/gaming. So that style of gaming companies.
Oh, all right. So like the guys that make casino machines.
Yeah. We're not talking about, EA Games or Ubisoft. They've already been hacked, right? In the past. Yeah. I think we talked about that, you know, months ago. Now they're moving to different gaming companies. And this ends up being an interesting attack from a social engineering standpoint.
Yeah.
Not as sophisticated as you might imagine. But there's still some interesting points in here. So what happens is, log into my, gambling account and I go to customer service and I say, hey, I'm running into this issue. Mm. And obviously I, as a customer service rep, want to help you out because you're paying my salary at this point as I can, if I get you gambling more, our company makes more money. So I say, okay, cool. What can I do to help out? And they say, you know what? I'm seeing this really weird thing. Can I send you a screenshot of what I'm seeing? They say, yeah, of course, send me a screenshot. And when they do that, it generally is a zipped up file, so a compressed file, that quote unquote has screenshots in it. And what's happening is the customer service rep downloads the zip, extracts it, and runs what they think is a screenshot. And it ends up being an executable.
Wow.
That then will take, and this, what I find interesting about this is it's almost like hackers have said, you know what? we've used this tactic on grandmas and grandpas for years, and it's worked awesome. Let's see if the gambling companies, it'll work there too. And it's the same tactic. It's, we're just going to say, we're going to have you go to a particular place. It downloads a rat called the Houdini rat.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
What's a rat? Tell everybody what a rat is.
A rat is a remote access tool or Trojan. So it's an application that sits in the background and hides and then gives remote actors access to your computer no matter where they are on the internet.
You got to see the graphic in this article, folks. It's
pretty scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And here's the thing. Like, I have been online with customer service very rarely, but the last one I did, I think I told you about, I had a laptop that just started freezing and I had to go online, but the hoops I had to jump through to be authorized to talk to these people makes me wonder, like, how these guys do that. Like, how does somebody just convince a customer service rep that they are just by what, spewing numbers, I guess, you know, just.
It's just the law of, that's the law of large numbers. If you call 20 of them, one of them's going to be lackadaisical, vulnerable, new.
Yeah.
Checked out, whatever it is. Like, maybe they just don't care.
And I've definitely had support engineers on the remote side. I won't name the companies, where they've opened tools I've sent them or they've gone to sites I've sent them.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, hey, can you check out this site? I can't get to this site. And they're like, oh yeah, let me look. And I'm like,
I mean, I sent them videos and images.
Yeah.
You know, by email. I said, here, I'll send you a video I took of it crashing.
Right.
And you know, there could have been something, but you know, I had to be authenticated before I could even talk to somebody. And that meant, you know, email validation, which apparently is bogus, doesn't, you know, can be, you know.
Well, like, how long does it take you to create a Gmail?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Proton Mail. Proton Mail's even lower.
I mean, honestly, it takes about 5 seconds.
But then I had to take picture of the serial number and I had to have proof of purchase. Like, there's just a whole bunch of things that I had to do.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Creating a Gmail is easy. Getting a burner phone is easy. It takes a couple of seconds. You can get, and they only cost usually a couple pennies for you to get a burner cell phone number that you can then use to sign up for services and that sort of stuff.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. There's all sorts of easy ways to do it. But what's interesting about this particular deployment is obviously antivirus is getting really good, right? So they're using VB. Yes, I said VB script, in this to deploy viruses.
Nothing wrong with that.
The joke here, keep people, is that for years I was a well-known Visual Basic or VB programmer in writing and speaking and training and all that stuff.
I love VB.
Oh, so do hackers.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, VB's still fantastic.
I just saw our license plate that said, I dig VB.
Oh, wow.
My license plate used to be VB.net.
There you go.
Yeah.
So VB is still a very viable, occupational programming language for hackers. And what they did is they decided, okay, this is actually interesting. So if you write a piece of malware, here again, for all of you malware writers out there.
I already played it once. I'm not going to play it again.
If you write a piece, I know. I wouldn't. If you write a piece of malware and you want to avoid antivirus detection, one of the neat things you can do is if you put a bunch of data in that particular executable, like this was a zip, right?
Yeah.
So let's say I put in that zip, I don't know, the Library of Congress, and I put that in there. It's so large, a lot of antivirus won't go through all of it because they have to extract the whole thing. And it'd be so large, they'd have no place to extract it. Even up in the cloud, if they're doing cloud submissions, they're not going to submit, you know, a 2 gig file to check if there's a virus in it. Hmm. So that's one very sort of low tech way to bypass a lot of antivirus is just make the virus really big. Because nobody's going to want to send it around.
Hmm.
There were some other cool ways to do it too, but that's one of them.
Okay. It's going to be a quiz on Friday.
Right. At the end. How do you bypass Defender, folks?
Oh my God. All right. So let's move on. I mean, that's just an interesting story of intrigue, right? I mean, there's nothing threatening our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, No. It comes back to, you know, A, social engineering is still really the number one way that we're getting people to click on things, right? So it's either going to be a phishing email, it's going to be a call. In this particular case, it was calling up a support rep.
So social engineering, let's talk about that for a second. Social engineering is when you take the norms of regular interaction and you manipulate them to get somebody to do something.
Right.
So in this case, it's not unusual for a support engineer to have to look at a screenshot from a user having a problem. It's not out of the ordinary. And so they're manipulating that norm to get their delivery through.
A good salesman is a social engineer.
Exactly.
Oh, well, absolutely.
That's what they do. They try to get you interested in what they're talking about. And, you know, through various means of psychological manipulation and whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those Jedi mind tricks don't work on us, do they?
We're not the droid you're looking for.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Gamereden. Gamereden? Gamereden, new Russian backed.
Gamereden. So this is coming. This will be coming back to Ukraine.
Okay.
We're seeing a lot of attacks. Obviously, in the cyber world.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a war going on.
Right? It's crazy. So this is a new spyware variant here again, looking to target Ukrainian entities. It's been around for a while, and they're still kind of revamping it. There's new versions of it that have come out. But here, this particular tactic is interesting. So it's almost like they said, you know what? Let's take everything we have and just throw it in a compressed file and see if somebody will do something with it. So the attack is a compressed RAR file, which is like a zip file.
Right.
And inside that RAR file is a link file. And then that link file points to an HTA file, which is an HTML, like help file, if you will. And that HTA file then deploys 3 VB scripts. And then those VB scripts open up some PowerShell scripts. So it's like, they were like, we're not sure what's going to work. Let's just take everything we have in the arsenal and put it in one little package and throw it at them. And then it creates a batch file. Runs a batch file, which then does Excel macros, which then tries to open.
Oh my God.
Excel macros. It's like literally, I think they were just like, let's just throw it all in here.
It's a Rube Goldberg machine.
I was just thinking the same thing, Carl.
It's the game of mousetrap.
Right? Right? The fanciest Rube Goldberg machine ever in malware. So it's crazy.
Is there a fax machine involved? That's what I want to know. That's the ultimate
be, right?
Tech Rube Goldberg.
Just the fax, ma'am.
Just the fax. This one also has the Houdini rat, actually hearkening back to the one we were just talking about. So it's this is an odd tactic, honestly, from an attacker standpoint. When I'm attacking an organization, the indicators of compromise that I leave in a company.
Yeah.
So when I break into an organization, there's obviously the evidence that defensive folks, blue team folks are going to try and track me down.
You just reminded me of the Dos Equis guy. I don't always break into an organization, but when I do,
when I do.
It never gets up again.
It can't be fixed. So when I break into an organization, usually, you know, I try and leave as little footprint as possible, right? I don't want any indicators or compromise. I don't want anybody to be able to track where I've been and what I've done.
Of course.
And this is
chaos.
This is pretty common, right? You don't want people to be able to follow your path. And in this case, they sprinkled so many things all over the place. It's like, yeah, it would be hard not to notice them in the system.
It.
And that's why I say this is kind of a weird tactic, but maybe in war, it doesn't matter.
We don't really know which one worked, right? I mean, it's kind of.
Right. I mean, it could be pretty much any one of those could be successful, I suppose. And I guess
what I worry about is this is the new script kiddie, that this is the new model for the unsophisticated hacker who just grabs everything and throws it,
right,
you know, headlong at you.
Yeah.
Because this is far more dangerous than the individual exploit script kiddie.
Mm. Yeah, but is this the same as like a sniper round versus a Tomahawk missile? Right? Like a Tomahawk missile is going to take out a big area and, you know, it is, you're throwing the kitchen sink at them. Whereas sniper round, you're going to be very targeted, very pinpointed, in one particular area.
Well, it's, I think, sniper round versus spraying and praying.
There you go.
No, yes. Automatic, yep. Spray. Agreed. And pray. You're not. So here's a little bit of military advice. You're only supposed to use automatic fire if you have multiple bobbing and weaving targets, or you have limited visibility, or you're just trying to do suppressive.
All right. So remember that, kids. When you go to boot camp and you start arguing with your sergeant, you can say, Patrick Hines says.
Remember that, kid.
And then you will get slapped.
Well, because you're really much better off taking down a target. And now U.S. Army rifles now do a 3-round burst. So you're supposed to, you know, the 3 rounds helps put down the target. But you really shouldn't be just like automatic fire unless you have one of those three conditions that I gave you.
Puts down the target. That's such a clean. It's like, hey,
right?
Your mother smells like kitty litter.
Put down that target.
Put that thing away. I'm sorry, Patrick. I couldn't help myself.
Yes, yes.
I guess we can't learn how to use machine guns correctly.
Well, no. And for good reason.
With you jokers.
Yeah. I think we're done with this one. So we're talking, right. We've been talking obviously about LastPass and Bitwarden and all these things. So there's another one we haven't talked about that made the news this week. KeePass. KeePass. Yes. Mm. Disputes vulnerability allowing stealthy password theft. So the development team behind the open source password management software, KeePass, is disputing what is described as a newly found vulnerability that allows attackers to stealthily export the entire database in plain text. So here's the thing.
That would be
it's
bad.
A popular open source password manager that lets you manage your passwords using a locally stored database. Rather than a cloud-hosted one, such as LastPass or Bitwarden. To secure these local databases, users can encrypt them using a master password so that malware or a threat actor can't just steal the database and automatically gain access to the passwords stored within it. And that is a very Carl Franklin naive way to look at it. Hackers will never be able to get into your database.
Yeah, so
because it's on your machine and you're smart.
So let's talk about this for a minute. So first they have to get on your network.
That's not
but
if
they
hard.
But yeah. So in an assumed breach world, in an assumed breach world, that's problematic because we do assume that they're going to do that. But what they're doing is they're doing a around the back configuration change. They're basically what KeePass has done is they've made the configuration file available to be changed.
Yikes.
So if I can change the configuration, I can change the way it works.
Yeah.
And that's where the vulnerability lies.
Oh my. I mean, you know, when the cloud started around, you know, when Amazon started their thing and cloud computing became a thing, people were thinking, you know, why would I want to trust my SQL server and my SQL data to Microsoft or to Amazon and stuff? And, you know, that's kind of a naive way to look at it because, well, Microsoft has hundreds of people that are watching the front door to make sure that nobody comes in around the clock because they're a global company. Whereas Joe, your security guy, goes on vacation once a year. And then who's minding the store? And, you know, he's only working 8 hours a day. So there's more chance that Joe is going to let some problem, let some attack happen than a cloud vendor.
It's not proof positive.
No, but it's likeliness.
But it's kind of like, it's kind of like the seatbelt thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are examples in the 35,000 people that die a year in car accidents in the United States. There's probably a couple of examples of people who, if they hadn't had a seatbelt on, they would have lived.
Right.
But there's so many more people who lived because they had seatbelts on. It's a false premise.
Yeah.
And it what this is like saying, well, I'm, you know, I'm just going to, you know, protect it myself because I, you know, I got a gun.
You know,
this is like hiring a platoon of people. I'm always going to turn to the military, man.
I still hear about people who plug their computer directly into their cable modem, giving themselves a publicly routable IP address and running Windows.
And only having one account on that machine that is an administrator.
Yeah, like
with a password that ends in 123.
Yeah.
It starts with
name
password.
Your cat, you know?
Password 123.
My cat name 123. Oh, exclamation point, because that makes it really.
Right. Well, it's secure though.
But you know what I mean? I mean, people don't even understand that they need to have a router, you know, a hub.
yeah,
a LAN, you know, a LAN hub.
Firewall.
We need the average, the basic level of capability to increase. Yeah. That's the problem, is right now it's still a target-rich environment for the hackers.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody is Patrick Hines and can secure their passwords locally.
Right?
Yeah.
And with vicious dogs and guns and things.
Right. Well, I think it you know, it doesn't bode well for KeePass, you know, knowing that even if it wasn't hacked, just knowing that there are people out there that aren't securing their password or their databases.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's not good.
Well, but there's always going to be, I mean, in their defense, this is an open source project. Somebody could come and do a better job of this. And just having a vulnerability, this is why we didn't like pan LastPass right away when we had opposed that. There's going to be vulnerabilities. Nothing is perfect. Every bit of software in the world has a 0 day hidden in it somewhere. We just don't know where it is and when it'll come out.
Otherwise, it would be a non-zero day. Yeah.
So you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Right. You still have to find a password safe. Otherwise, you have to have you can only dip your toe in the internet because there's just too many accounts. I've got a really good memory. I remember almost everything I read. I remember many, many passwords.
Yeah.
I still can't keep track of them all. So you do have to. You have to have a password manager of some sort.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, when you go from car to car, you don't always buy the same car every time you get a new car. Yeah. But every 2 to 3 years, you think about cars and you think about what your needs are. You should do the same thing with password managers.
2 or 3 years. How often do you buy a new car?
I know. Jeez, man.
What's Patrick's living the high life?
I got a 13-year-old van I'm driving now.
Patrick's like pimping out in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I meant house. I'm sorry. I meant house.
Oh, 2 to 3 years.
I'm sorry. I meant jet. Jet. Yeah. That's what I meant.
Okay. Jet. Everybody swaps out their jets every couple of years.
Knuckleheads. I'll talk to you next week.
Good seeing you.
Yeah, bye. You too.
See you, Carl.
All right. Bye-bye.